Hi, my name is Kirsten and I'm from Manchester. I have been part of Wild Girls Tell Pike since April 2021 when I was 14. Wild Girls Tell Pike is based on 200 acres in Garsdale, Cumbria. We have developed a youth steering group and it's a youth-led environmental project for people between the ages of 13 and 25. Garsdale Pike offers young people from across the Northwest the opportunity to get involved in practical conservation and learn about the environment. I enjoy being part of Wild Girls Tell Pike as it means I get to spend time out of the city with other like-minded feeling people. I have also found out through this that I would like to work in conservation as a career, not just as a hobby. To find out more, visit our website wildgirls.pike.org.uk. Please support our work and give more young people this opportunity by hitting the donate button.
Hello and welcome back to Restoring Pike Podcast with me, your host, Jack Cole. So today I'm joined by Paul Brady from Wild Garsdale Pike. So welcome, Paul. Thank you so much for your time. Let's start by telling us a little bit about your background and what it is that makes Cumbria such an important location for wildlife.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm one of the trustees for Wild Garsdale Pike, a newly formed charity. We're right up there on the border of Cumbria and technically we're in the old West Riding of Yorkshire in Garsdale. Cumbria is really important for wildlife and nature, in my opinion, because it's got a couple of unique things. It's got lots of big hills, what some people call mountains. Our land goes all the way up to over 670 metres elevation, so it's pretty big. And you can see quite far from the top as well. And the other thing we get is a lot of rain as well, and that steep hill with a flat top and flat areas and lots of rain leads to some quite important features like peat bogs. And I was just reading in the last couple of weeks or so, it was kind of in there in the back of my mind, but we're kind of really uniquely placed in the world, really, from the kind of a good level of rainfall and a decent level of warmth, so that we get the formation of peat bogs. It's really quite a narrow kind of latitude that you get these peat bogs forming, and so Cumbria is really quite important in England for upland peat bogs, and we're lucky enough here at Garsdale to have a little bit one of them. So I guess that's probably one of the habitats that Cumbria is most famous for. All that water is good for something.
Brilliant. Okay, and that leads us in nicely to what is Wild Garsdale Pike?
So we're a charity. We've been going about a year as a charity, but prior to that, I've been working with the lady that set it up, Rosie, for about 3.5 to 4 years, just as a bit of a venture. And right from the very beginning, her vision was to purchase an area of land and restore it, to improve it for nature, but to also give access to that for young people. And particularly kind of what we think is our USP, to give a bit of business speak, really, I guess, is to give young people the opportunity to input into decisions around what we do with the land, and even in some cases decide what happens to the land. So we have a young people kind of steering group, we call it, and that's people from the age of 13 up to about 25 that come and visit the site 4 to 6 times a year. We do online sessions as well, but these young people have an opportunity to get to know the land, to meet new people and make friends, because they come from all over, mainly the northwest of England, but some are from cities and some are from more rural locations. And they get an opportunity to take part in practical stuff like digging ponds or putting fences up or helping us to manage the our herbivores, cattle and pigs and stuff like that, that we use to help restore the land. They've done surveys of butterflies and moths and birds and small mammals. So they really get a hands-on experience to do stuff, but also to then we bring in experts, as people who know a lot of stuff about stuff that we don't know about, to talk to them about, how to create a woodland, or how you would manage the watercourses differently, or and various different technical aspects, and just gives them an opportunity to learn as well as discover.
Brilliant. And so just circling back a little bit, you mentioned peat bogs. Could you describe a little bit the significance and the importance of peat bogs in the ecosystem?
I'll say I'm not a peat bog expert. I mean, my main area of interest is birds. But yeah, I can say a little bit about peat bogs in that, as I kind of alluded to earlier, there's kind of really only a kind of a narrow landscape in which they occur. They build up very, very slowly, only up to 1 millimeter a year, really. And what it is organic matter being trapped in an anaerobic, i.e., without oxygen, environment on it, and it's really slow decomposition. But the importance of them is, apart from being a fantastic habitat, if you ever get the chance to be in one, because they're fantastic habitats for dragonflies, loads of different bog specialist plants, and a lot of birds lo love to nest in peat bogs because it gives them kind of an extra level of protection, because it's harder for a ground-based predator to walk out across a peat bog than it is a dry field. You're at risk of getting your feet stuck, because these peat bogs are quite squishy, but they're a fantastic sink for carbon. They absorb lots and lots of carbon, up to 10 times more than a forest would per kind of square meter, if you like. So they're really important carbon sinks, as well as being fantastic habitats. And here, in Cumbria, and actually across northern England, a lot of peat bogs have been drained and dried out, by artificial channels being dug in them to drain the water off and run down into the valleys. And that obviously degrades the habitat, but it also, when the soil begins to dry out, the carbon gets released into the atmosphere as well. So it's like a double whammy of bad things, for the environment and nature. So yeah, one of the kind of key projects we're looking at Wild Garsdale is to try and restore the peat bog by undertaking a process of blocking those drainage channels, which we call grips in this part of the world. And then the water begins to kind of hold on, onto the peat bog. It stays on the peat bog longer, and that has the added effect of reducing flood risk further down the valley. And additionally, as well, it helps to kind of filter the water. You have that slow drip drip process of the water coming off the bog. So restoring a peat bog just does wonders for water quality, water storage, and reduction of floods, providing fantastic habitats for, do you know what? I think I was reading, it's about 11 species of dragonfly in the UK rely almost entirely on peat bogs. And I think that's of about 30 odd species of dragonfly that we get in the UK. So yeah, fantastic, important for dragonflies and all kinds of fantastic, amazing little plants that, our version of the Venus flytrap, the sundews and butterworts that trap insects in the leaves and digest them to get added nutrients that they can't get from the soil.
You
So just
mentioned, oh, sorry.
they're fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. And you mentioned that you're more a bird guy. Tell us about some of the bird species and how they're affected and could be by the potential work you guys are up to.
So at Wild Garsdale, I undertook a bit of kind of desk-based research, being kind of the resident person who was super keen on bird watching. And I look back through all the old records of birds that were in the landscape in the past and have been recorded there nesting. And I've been doing surveys recently, and I'm just having a good old look at the land. And we, sadly, it feels like we've lost about 30 different bird species that have bred there in the past, have been present there in the past. And a big kind of clump of these are the ones that would nest on a peat bog that we've seen return to peat bogs in other peat bog restoration projects, like RSPB's Dovestone project, in the Peak District. Thinking about the wading birds that nest on the ground, birds like curlews, golden plover, And one other one that's possibly on the edge of its kind of range here would be Dunlin as well. And then, if you were kind of dreaming, you might think about things like snipe and other wading birds like that. So we haven't got any of them yet, but given enough time, we hope we're optimistic enough to think we'll get them back because we're actually quite lucky beyond our land on the top. There's other areas of land where there are curlew and where there are some of the other missing species from our landscape, like black grouse. They're not too far away, so we hope they should be able to recolonize if we restore the habitat.
And you mentioned that Wild Goss Pike, you guys have a young person's led steering group. How exactly does that work, and how do they sort of convene and come decisions and go about certain ideas they might have?
Yeah, so we say we're learning lots of lessons as we go. As I said, we're a newish charity, so it's a great le learning opportunity for us trustees as well. We also volunteer on the project, so at the moment we have no paid staff, so we're trustees, volunteers, and kind of trying to do all of the work ourselves. But the young people are kind of really super important. It gives them an opportunity to get involved with the project, and we. And however they want to get involved with the project, that we kind of let them. So we have on our website and through our social media, we advertise for anybody who wants to get involved. And all a potential young person would need to do to get involved would be to fill an application form. We host visits, and we have somewhere between 6 to 8 visits per year to the site. Some of them include stopovers. And we arrange for the travel. We arrange for all the use of the equipment. We sort out all the food as well. So there's not a lot the young people kind of have to kind of bear in mind. Just bring an open mind and a willingness to learn and explore.
Brilliant. And you mentioned that guys are quite a new charity. So how are you looking to expand and develop over the coming years?
We're really kind of focusing on getting a really steady cohort of young people involved. So we have had some young people that have been involved for the even before we're a charity for the full kind of 4 years. And we've got some people who've been involved for a couple of years, so we really kind of want to ensure that that core of young people is there and taking part in the activities on the land and feeding into our discussions at trustee level about what we might do with the land in the future. So that's kind of one of the main aims, is to get our name out there and to get it to a point where it'd be a dream where we don't have to proactively scout for young people to get involved. Want to be kind of flicking through those applications and rubber stamping them and saying, yeah, come along to a taster session and get involved. We are also very kind of research led in the fact that we want young people to come and observe and record and really see the changes in the land as they happen over the years. So we have pretty much totally taken away the grazing pressure of the sheep. It was formerly really, well, as intensive as it can be in a really steep upland area. And we've moved to using just a couple of cattle to graze most of the land. So one of our main aims is just, let's see what happens and with the land restore and really with a kind of more of a hands-off approach. So they're the kind of main, they're the two main areas really, is to kind of continue and solidly to have a good bunch of young people being involved on our kind of steering group, and to continue to kind of tweak and watch the land recover.
And for a young person who might be listening to this, what would be the what's the process, what to expect? They sort of see Wild Scarsdale Pike, what could they expect through to experience, and what's the whole onboarding and meeting new people, and what's the general size that you currently have as a cohort?
Yeah, so we've got Anywhere between kind of 6 to 20 people might turn up for a visit, depending on who can get there and whether it fits in with other stuff going on in life. We're totally flexible. You don't have to come to every single session. Some people come to one or two and decide it's not for them. And some people, fall in love straight away. We're totally kind of laid back. We don't have particularly, really solid learning outcomes like you might have in a school, but there are many opportunities to still learn. And we tend to, ahead of time, let you know what you're going to need, what activities are going to happen, what sort of things are in the pipeline for the future. And when we're on site as well, we can be totally flexible with how and what you get involved with and what you don't want to get involved with. So if you don't want to dig a pond and get really muddy, then you don't have to do that. If you don't want to climb all the way up to the top of the peak and have a look at the grips on the peat bog, then there might be an opportunity to be lower down and do less intensive walking and maybe do a standing bird watch. So we really try to keep things flexible, and what we want as well, and what we do get is feedback from the people involved to influence, future sessions of what they might like to do. So I mean, and to our surprise, we found that some of the sessions that we thought might be really popular were not, and vice versa. And that's why it's really important to listen and to, to be proactive about gathering that feedback about what worked and what didn't work.
What are some of the sort of special experiences that you've had or memories that you've had out there in the
Well, there's one that combines two really kind of unique bits, and I was going to be kind of really selfish and think, well, it's the first, it's the time when I went up there, the other in the spring, and I saw a stonechat carrying insects, and well, carrying like caterpillars in its mouth, and they're only carrying it for one thing, and that means it's got a nest. And it was only me that saw that, and I thought that's really selfish, isn't it? But it's not. We had a visit in the spring, and I forget what we were doing, but we were walking up the land, and one of the young people who's not been involved with it that long found a dung beetle, and that was super special to me. One, because they'd spotted it and they found it, and they were actually looking for stuff. I tend to walk around because I'm a bird watcher with my eyes like up in the air and on the trees and stuff. But we've got some fantastic young people who are taking interest in the stop at every little bit of fungus or every little bit of whatever. And one time I remember doing this thing around, poo and the difference between the treated sheep poo and our cattle's poo. And then talking about, oh, maybe one day we'll have dung beetles. And it actually happened, and it was one of our young people that found our first ever dung beetle, and it was just like, yes, it's working on so many levels. Yeah,
Brilliant.
that was great.
Fantastic. And finally, Paul, where can people find you to support your work or get involved?
The easiest way, yeah, is to go direct to our website, which is kind of hidden behind me, but it's, wildgasdalepike.org.uk. And what we're really after, as well as young people taking part, is people. You don't have to be a young person to take a part. We'll happily take on board volunteers, because me and Rosie and the other trustees can't do it all by ourselves. And in addition to that, it'd be really nice if we got a couple of donations as well, because we need equipment, we need to get people to the site. We are a charity, we have some funding, but yeah, the more donations the better, really.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. It's been great.